Hey there, hi there, ho there, Inklings, and welcome back to Catawampus Readings, the podcast where beginnings and introductions begin to look very similar after a while. When I chose this week's classic, winding down towards the end of our classic series, I saw that Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls was available at the library, but then I told myself, I can't do that book, I've done it already. But when I opened up my files to check old scripts, I couldn't find it anywhere. Inklings, am I losing it? Or did this whole episode just disappear? Since I can't find it anywhere, I'm going to assume that I just imagined recording and scripting an entire episode at some point in the last year, and I'm not gonna dwell on that. I'm gonna move on. There seemed to be, as far as I can tell anyway, roughly three categories of classics that we've covered so far. Those being books to remind adults what it's like to be a child, books to entertain children, and books about animals, which could be in either one of the former categories, depending on how you look at it. Where the Red Fern Grows fits squarely in this oddly specific category that I've brought up before, that includes Shiloh, Old Yeller, and Because of Winn-Dixie. I call this category Child with Dog, which honestly sounds a bit like an old painting. All of these books orbit around the central concept of relationships, usually between the child and the dog, as well as between the child and their family, the child and their friends, and the child and random strangers in the area that may or may not like dogs. If that seems weird to you, you're not alone. It seems weird to me, too, and if I knew why this pattern was a thing, I think I would be a much better author. For those of you who avoided dog books because, like me, you didn't like it when the dog died at the end, Where the Red Fern Grows is pitched like this. Billy has long dreamt of owning not one, but two dogs, so when he's finally able to save up enough money for two pups to call his own, Old Dan and Little Ann, he's ecstatic. It doesn't matter that times are tough, together they'll roam the hills of the Ozarks. Soon, Billy and his hounds become the finest hunting team in the valley. Stories of their great achievements spread throughout the region, and the combination of Old Dan's brawn and Little Ann's brains and Billy's sheer will seems unbeatable. But tragedy awaits these determined hunters, now friends, and Billy learns that hope can grow out of despair, and that the seeds of the future can grow from the scars of the past. Okay. Trying to be as objective as possible, by which I mean pretending that I've never read this book before, I can honestly say that this pitch is full of things that I love. Character and emotion. There's a great hook at the very beginning with the statement that the main character wants, more than anything else in the world, two puppies of his very own. Where it falls apart is also where my attempt to pretend that I've never read the book runs into the fact that I have read this book before more than once, and I can see that this pitch summarizes more or less the entire book right up to the last chapter. Now, it doesn't actually say what happens, so I can't say that my biased opinion is accurate. It's possible that tragedy awaits means something different to you than it does to me, and the seeds of the future can grow from the scars of the past might be construed to mean something other than what it actually means at the end of the book. But we all know this is a sad book. What's more, we know that it's a dog book, and on top of all that, I'm just gonna leave it there, and we can move on to the actual story. In short, I'm going to give this pitch 4 stars out of 5 for grabbing my attention, and let 1 star fall off the end because the hook came at the cost of giving away 85% of the story. I can almost guarantee I'm being way too harsh here. This is easily the best back cover pitch we've seen so far, and maybe I should just cut it some slack. Anyway, let's move on to the story proper and see how the author himself introduces his readers to this story. Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls. Chapter 1. When I left my office that beautiful spring day, I had no idea what was in store for me. To begin with, everything was too perfect for anything unusual to happen. It was one of those days when a man feels good, feels like speaking to his neighbor, is glad to live in a country like ours, and proud of his government. You know what I mean, one of those days when everything is right and nothing is wrong. I was walking along, whistling, when I heard a dogfight. At first, I paid no attention to it. After all, it wasn't anything to get excited about, just another dogfight in a residential section. As the sound of the fight drew nearer, I could tell there were quite a few dogs mixed up in it. They boiled out of an alley, turned, and headed straight toward me. Not wanting to get bitten or run over, I moved over to the edge of the sidewalk. I could see all the dogs were fighting one. About 25 feet from me, they caught him, and down he went. I felt sorry for the unfortunate one. I knew if something wasn't done quickly, the sanitation department would be picking up a dead dog. I was trying to make up my mind to help when I got a surprise. Up out of that snarling, growling, slashing mass reared an old red-bone hound. For a second, I saw him. I caught my breath. I couldn't believe what I had seen. Twisting and slashing, he fought his way through the pack and backed up onto the low branches of a hedge. Growling and snarling, they formed a half-moon circle around him. A big bird dog, bolder than the others, darted in. The hedge shook as he tangled with the hound. He came out so fast he fell over backwards. I saw that his right ear was split wide open. It was too much for him, and he took off down the street squalling like a scalded cat. A big ugly cur tried his luck. He didn't get off so easy. He came out with his left shoulder laid open to the bone. He sat down on his rear and let the whole world know he had been hurt. By this time, my fighting blood was boiling. It's hard for a man to stand and watch an old hound fight against such odds, especially if that man has memories in his heart like I had in mine. I had seen the time when an old hound like that had given his life for me that I might live. Taking off my coat, I waded in. My yelling and scolding didn't have much effect, but the swinging coat did. The dogs scattered and left. Down on my knees, I peered back under the hedge. The hound was still mad. He growled at me and showed his teeth. I knew it wasn't in his nature to fight a man. In a soft voice, I started talking to him. "Come on, boy," I said. "It's all right. I'm your friend. Come on now." The fighting fire slowly left his eyes. He bowed his head and his long red tail started thumping the ground. I kept coaxing. On his stomach, an inch at a time, he came to me and laid his head in my hand. I almost cried at what I saw. His coat was dirty and mud-caked. His skin was stretched drum-tight over his bony frame. The knotty joints of his hips and shoulders stood out a good 3 inches from his body. I could tell he was starved. I couldn't figure it out. He didn't belong in town. He was far out of place with the boxers, poodles, and bird dogs and other breeds of town dog. He belonged in the country. He was a hunting hound. I raised one of his paws. There I read the story. Pads were worn down, slick as the rind on an apple. I knew he'd come a long way, and no doubt had a long way to go. Around his neck was a crude collar. On closer inspection, I saw it had been made from a piece of check line leather. 2 holes had been punched through each end, and the ends were laced together with baling wire. As I turned the collar with my finger, I saw something else there. Scratched deep in the tough leather was the name Buddy. I guess that the crude, scribbly letters had probably been written by a little boy. It's strange indeed how memories can lie dormant in a man's mind for so many years, yet those memories can be awakened and brought forth fresh and new just by something you've seen or heard or the sight of an old, familiar face. What I saw in the warm gray eyes of the friendly old hound brought back wonderful memories. To show my gratitude, I took hold of his collar and said, "Come on, boy. Let's go home and get something to eat." When I first read this introduction, I was confused and disappointed. Who is this guy? Why is he talking? What does a stray dog have to do with the price of tea in China? The implication is actually pretty clear, I think, but it takes a while to get there, and the author takes an entire chapter to get to the point. This guy is our main character, Billy, several decades after the story that we're actually interested in. This is part of what we call a framing sequence, or a bookend scene, which are scenes that bracket the main story. Sometimes they take place in an unrelated location, or they indicate the story in question is being told or remembered by someone else. Think, for example, about that first scene in the movie The Princess Bride, where Grandpa offers to read the book to his sick grandson. Or a few weeks back when we were talking about A Princess of Mars, the first book in the Barsoom series, where the main character, John Carter, is introduced to us by his nephew, who's reading a manuscript that contains the rest of the book. Framing sequences are usually used to explain to the audience why the story is being told or remembered, and why it's important. The beginning of Secondhand Lions, which is one of my favorite movies, shows the main character receiving a call about his uncles, which he spends the rest of the movie remembering as they were when he was a child. This scene is serving a very similar function, or at least it's trying. I don't think it's succeeding very well. The thing about framing sequences is that if they distract from the core story, then they're not doing very well at framing anything. If you look at a painting on the wall, and the first thing you notice is the frame, then the frame isn't doing what it's supposed to do. That is, showcase the painting. I actually find this opening chapter to be more irritating than anything else, because it takes so long to get to the part that I'm interested in. That is, you know, the story that I was promised on the back cover of the book and the reason why I'm reading this thing at all. So while there's nothing wrong with the scene itself, generously speaking, in the context of this isn't the story I want to be reading, it's less than stellar. I'm going to give this introduction a 2 out of 5. It has potential. It could have been pulled off really well. As it is, it's not the story I want to read. It's not the story I was promised. And that's not cool. That's all I have for you this week. The random question of the day is, if you could learn to play any instrument in the world, what instrument would you choose? Until next time, stay healthy and hydrated, my Inklings. Enjoy the spring weather, and remember to stop and smell the flowers while they're still around. This has been your host, Inkfire, and you have been a fantastic audience. I'll see you on the other side. Thank you for listening to Catawampus Readings. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. If you're interested in supporting Catawampus Readings and would like early access to new episodes, you can sign up to donate monthly at patreon.com/inkfire. Special thanks to our patrons, Corvus, Valkyrie, and Barry Marie.